This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapters 23 through 26 will be the text that Pastor Sandy covers today.
Well, because of Joash's heart for God, his first project was to raise money for temple repairs. Now, it happened after this that Joash set his heart on repairing the house of the Lord. Then he gathered the priests and the Levites and said to them, "Go out to the cities of Judah and gather from all Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year, and see that you do it quickly." However, the Levites did not do it quickly. So the king called Jehoiada the chief priest and said to him, "Why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and from Jerusalem the collection, according to the commandment of Moses, a servant of the Lord, and of the assembly of Israel for the tabernacle of witness?" In Exodus 35, when Moses built the tabernacle, he took a freewill offering from the people to pay for the work that had been accomplished. This eventually evolved into a temple tax. In Nehemiah's day, the temple tax was a third of a shekel. If my memory serves me correct, by New Testament times, it was half a shekel. As usual, taxes go up. "For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had brought into the house of God and had also presented all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord to the Baals." In his online commentary, David Guzik makes this comment: "It is possible for God to cause the money and materials to just appear by a miracle. Yet he chooses to almost always fund his work through the willing gifts of his people. He works this way because we need to be a giving people." It is true. God doesn't need our gifts. It's us who need to be in the habit of giving to God. God's way is always to fund his work through the freewill offerings of his people. That's the way it was in Moses' day. That's the way it was in Joash's time. That's the way God's work gets done today. "Then at the king's command, they made a chest and set it outside the gate of the house of the Lord." Notice this. They put the offering boxes right next to the exits, just like we've done right here at Calvary Chapel. You see that? We're biblical right there. We're just like Joash. The offering boxes are right next to the gates. "And they made a proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the collection that Moses, the servant of God, had imposed on Israel in the wilderness. Then all the leaders and all the people rejoiced, brought their contributions, and put them into the chest until all had given." And I love these words. "The people rejoiced because their contributions and brought their contributions and put them into the chest." Notice, the people rejoiced as they gave their offering. Rather than being a grudging thing, the people were cheerful givers. They appreciated the opportunity to give back to God from that which he had given to them. And they all came to give. No one wanted to be left out. Years ago, there was an impoverished woman from Paris. She put 27 francs in a collection plate for her church's missionaries. The pastor knew that this woman was blind. And so he told her, "Madam, you can't afford to give this money." She insisted that she could. And after being questioned by the pastor, she finally explained, "I asked a friend how much she spent each year for oil to light the lamps in her house so her family could see at night. She told me 27 francs. Since I'm blind and don't need a lamp, I figured this is money that I could give to spread the light of God into a dark world." How's that for a giving heart and a noble attitude? She saw that giving to God was an opportunity, not an obligation. Have you seen that yet? That giving to God is an opportunity for you to get involved in his work. It's an opportunity, not an obligation. And this was the attitude that helped Joash refurbish the temple. With the kitty king Joash, he started well, but boy, he finished sour. While Jehoiada was alive, he served the Lord. But when the priest died, so did Joash's devotion to God. King Joash turned to idols, and he conspired to kill the prophet that God had sent to warn him. He ended up wounded in battle and was actually murdered by his own servants. We read his story. So it was at that time when the chest was brought to the king's official by the hand of the Levites, and when they saw that there was much money, that the king's scribe and the high priest's officer came and emptied the chest and took it and returned it to its place. Thus they did day by day and gathered money in abundance. And of course, this was the good times. This was the times when the offerings were being given. Notice this. Notice that the work of God wasn't relegated to a shoestring budget. In other words, they didn't just get by. The priests had an abundance of money. Now, what's important to note is that temple repairs can be expensive. And that's what Joash was doing. Verse 12. Well, the king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord. And they hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord, and also those who worked in iron and bronze to restore the house of the Lord. And so the workmen labored, and the work was completed by them. They restored the house of God to its original condition and reinforced it. And when they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada. They made from it articles for the house of the Lord, articles for serving and offering, spoons and vessels of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. But Jehoiada, this was the priest that had nurtured Joash from a young age. He grew old, and he was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and his house. Jehoiada had been a mighty man of God. And as it turns out, he was the driving force behind the young king's godly zeal. He wielded influence over kings, this old priest. But remember back in verse 2, you might flip there, read it with me. Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. The implication is that when the priest died off, Joash fell into sin. You see, Joash had lived off the faith and the convictions of a mentor. He had failed to grow his own roots. He had never developed a personal walk with God. And this can happen to you and me. This can happen to God's kids who are around a good Christian influence, around a godly mentor, have ladies in her life that love the Lord and are good examples, but suddenly when those examples are gone, if you haven't sunk deep roots yourself, your faith might stray as well. This can happen to kids who grow up in Christian homes. Some of you guys here tonight, as soon as dad or mom or your Christian friends are out of the picture, maybe when you go off to college, suddenly your faith hits the skids and you fall away. Why? Because you haven't sunk deep roots. Don't be like Joash. Make sure that you have your own personal and vibrant and strong relationship with God. Now, after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. And their advice was both evil and wicked. You know, it's sad. Evidently, Joash had no backbone of his own. He listened to everyone else and he followed the pack. Joash was a thermometer. You know what a thermometer does? It reads the surrounding temperature. It conforms to the surrounding temperature. I want to be a thermostat. That sets the surrounding temperature. Are you a thermometer or are you a thermostat? Joash was too impressionable. He never formed his own beliefs and his own values. Verse 18 tells us the outcome of Joash's compromise. Therefore, they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers, and they served wooden images and idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespass. And yet he, meaning God, sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord. And they testified against them, but they would not listen. They failed to heed the warnings. And then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, who stood above the people and said to them, "Thus says God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, He has also forsaken you. I hope you realize that. That if you forsake, if you transgress the commandments of the Lord, you cannot prosper. Have you learned that yet? You know, the best way to prosper, the best way to get ahead is to follow the Lord. He loves you. He cares about you. His ways are best. He's the creator. He created life. He knows how best it should operate. When you transgress the commandments of the Lord, friend, you cannot prosper, at least not for long. And so they conspired against him, and at the commandment of the king, they stone him with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Look how far Joash has fallen. This Zechariah, the man that they stoned, this is the son of Jehoiada. This is the son of the priest that had saved Joash's life and had nurtured him in his younger years. Joash falls so far from God that he stones the son of his own friend. Thus, Joash the king did not remember the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him, but killed his son. And as he died, he said, "The Lord look on it and repay." The prophet's dying prayer is to ask God for justice on his murderer. What ominous words those must have been. And so it happened in the spring of the year that the army of Syria came up against him. And they came to Judah and Jerusalem and destroyed all the leaders of the people from among the people and sent all their spoil to the king of Damascus. Put bluntly, the royal court of Joash was butchered. And for the army of the Assyrians came with a small company of men, but the Lord delivered a very great army into their hand because they had forsaken the Lord God of their fathers. So they executed judgment against Joash. Isn't that interesting? God can take just a few men and he can overcome a mighty army. But on the same token, God can take a few men and he can make sure your mighty army doesn't succeed. It works both ways. Judah had Syria outnumbered. But no matter how mighty you think you are, you can't fight against God. Not in win. Well, when they had withdrawn from him, for they left him severely wounded, his own servants conspired against him because of the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest and killed him on his bed, so he died. What a sad way to die. They leave him to bleed to death, and then other people come along and finish him off violently. You know, Jehoiada was such a man of integrity. Everyone respected him, so much so that when Joash killed Jehoiada's son, the king made some vicious enemies. And they buried Joash in the city of David, but they did not bury him in the tombs of the kings. In other words, they considered him unworthy of a royal burial. Joash is such a sad story. You know, it proves the old adage, it's not how you start that counts, it's how you finish. He started out a bright star, but he ended up a disgrace. I like how G. Campbell Morgan sums up Joash's life. Listen closely, especially you young people. He says, "The story offers a striking illustration of how a weak man is easily influenced. It emphasizes the need of strong individual character, which is only created by direct dealing with God." There's a person in your life you look up to, great. But make sure you look up to his God, not just to him. And make sure you develop a relationship with Jesus on your own. Sink those deep roots. Now, these are the ones who conspired against him. Zabad, he was a bad dude, Zabad, the son of Shimeath the Ammonitess, and Jehozabad, another bad dude, the son of Shimrith the Moabitess. Now, concerning his sons and the many oracles about him and the repairing of the house of God, indeed, they are written in the annals of the book of the kings. Then Amaziah, his son, reigned in his place. Chapter 25, Amaziah was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehohanan of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a loyal heart. Here's a man who went through the motions, but without the devotion. Here was a man who was outwardly righteous, but he had impure motives. He looked good. But as Jesus said to the Pharisees, he was like a whitewashed tomb full of dead men's bones. This man, Amaziah, he was all show and no substance. Verse 3. Now it happened as soon as the kingdom was established for him that he executed his servants who had murdered his father, the king. However, he did not execute their children, but did as it was written in the law of the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded, saying, "The fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall the children be put to death for their fathers, but a person shall die for his own sin." Moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together and set over them captains of thousands and captains of hundreds, according to their fathers' houses, throughout all Judah and Benjamin. And he numbered them from 20 years old and above, and found them to be 300,000 choice men, able to go to war, who could handle spear and shield. Obviously, Amaziah is preparing for battle. He also hired 100,000 mighty men of valor from Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel, for 100 talents of silver. He hired an additional 100,000 Israeli mercenaries from the northern kingdom to help him fight. But a man of God came to him saying, "O king, do not let the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel." Remember, they had given themselves to idolatry. "Now with any of the children of Ephraim, but if you go, be gone, be strong in battle. Even so, God shall make you fall before the enemy, for God has power to help and to overthrow." The prophet warns Amaziah not to ally himself with the idolaters to the north. This is what got his predecessors in trouble. You remember from last week? Remember the problem with Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah? They all allied themselves with Israel. They all became unequally yoked with unbelievers. And when you join forces, when you become legally entangled with an unbeliever, you put yourself in the line of fire. When God's judgment comes upon that unbeliever, you could very well be caught up in it. Then Amaziah said to the man of God, "But what shall we do about the 100 talents which I have given to the troops of Israel?" Amaziah said, "I've already invested in this. I paid those mercenaries 100 pounds of silver, 100 talents of silver. That's a lot of silver. What about the money?" And the man of God answered, "The Lord is able to give you much more than this." Now, here is a hindrance to obeying God that we often face. What about my investment? God, I've got 20 years in this company. I can't just pick up and move even if you tell me. What about my investment? Oh, Lord, I know he's an unbeliever. I know it's wrong to date him. But we've been going out for 5 years now. Look at what I've got invested. I can't just give that up. God, I've got an A in the course already. If I take a stand now, the teacher might get upset and it might jeopardize my grade. Look at my investment. How many times do we think that? Hey, listen to what the prophet says to Amaziah in verse 9. He says, "The Lord is able to give you much more than this." Yes, there is often a cost to obey God. You might lose your investment, but God is faithful to reimburse your loss. Remember what Jesus told his disciples in Matthew 19? He said, "And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my name's sake shall receive 100-fold and inherit eternal life." In other words, it really is impossible to sacrifice anything for God, because he not only returns your investment, but he adds some to boot. So Amaziah discharged the troops that had come to him from Ephraim to go back home. Therefore, their anger was greatly aroused against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. In their eyes, Judah had reneged on the deal. Well, then Amaziah strengthened himself, and leading his people, he went to the Valley of Salt, the Dead Sea, and he killed 10,000 of the people of Seir. Also, the children of Judah took captive 10,000 alive, brought them to the top of the rock and cast them down from the top of the rock so that they all were dashed in pieces. Amaziah won a decisive victory over Judah's ancient enemy, the Edomites. But as for the soldiers of the army, those soldiers of fortune that he had hired from Israel, which Amaziah had discharged, so that they would not go with him to battle, they raided the cities of Judah from Samaria to Beth Horon, killed 3,000 in them, and took much spoil. While Amaziah was preoccupied with Edom to the south, these disappointed Israeli mercenaries, they pillaged a few Judean towns on their way back home. And what happens next has to be one of the stupidest stunts in all the scriptures. What is this man thinking? Amaziah has just defeated the Edomites. He has routed them. He has trounced them. You remember, they all were dashed to pieces. That's a defeat. Obviously, their gods did them no good. But for some strange reason, Amaziah chooses to worship the gods of the people he's just defeated. Verse 14. Now it was so, after Amaziah came from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the people of Seir, set them up to be his gods, and bowed down before them and burned incense to them. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Amaziah. And he sent him a prophet who said to him, "Why have you sought the gods of the people which could not rescue their own people from your hand?" This made no sense. Evidently, Amaziah's victory had gone to his head. And when you get intoxicated with pride, you don't always think straight. Suddenly, this king assumes he's invincible. He no longer needs God. He prefers the God of the Edomites because he is greater than those gods. Amaziah gets the big head. He makes one of those fat heads of himself and puts it on his wall in his bedroom, you know. He's somebody stuck on himself. Verse 16. So it was, as he talked with him, that the king said to him, "Have we made you the king's counselor? Cease! Why should you be killed?" King Amaziah threatens God's spokesman. Then the prophet ceased and said, throws in one final word of warning, "I know that God has determined to destroy you because you have done this and have not heeded my advice. Judgment awaits this proud king." Now Amaziah, king of Judah, asked advice and sent to Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, "Come, let us face one another in battle." Amaziah is fresh off a victory over Edom. And this has gone to his head. He thinks he's invincible. And so he turns around and he challenges a much stronger kingdom to the north, the kingdom of Israel. Understand what this is like. This past Friday night, Sal Quinette went up to South Forsyth, and they won like 30-26, I think it was. Go Comets. But let's say they come back and they get the big head this week. You know, we won a game. Let's say they win another game. Let's say they beat Brookwood. That would be a blessing. Let's say they beat Brookwood and they think, "Oh, we can beat anybody." And then they call up Mark Rick on the phone. And they challenge the Georgia Bulldogs. They don't stand a chance. And this is what happened to Amaziah. Success went to his head. Hey, UGA is no high school team, and Israel was no Edom. And Joash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, this is Mark Rick writing back to Sal Quinette, saying, "The thistle that was in Lebanon," he just called Amaziah a thistle. Amaziah, you're a pine needle, buddy. That's all you are.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.